Rachel Carson, Silent Spring, was so powerful it helped end the use of DDT. And many of us cheered its demise. But pointing to the millions of people around the world who suffer from malaria, some now ask, should we not end the ban on DDT?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 544th edition of the Food Chain Radio program right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends way over there in Gay Paris who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with Dave Michaels on the boards. Hello, Dave.
Glad to be here.
Producer Carol Stafford on the phones. Hello, Carol.
Hi there.
And salesperson extraordinaire Parmalee Taff on sales. Welcome aboard. Folks, some things we just accept as being true. The sun will come up tomorrow. Flowers will bloom in spring. Apples will fall from trees. To deny these truths is to deny nature herself. Another thing that we have come to accept as being true is that DDT is evil. It killed our birds. It gave us cancer. DDT is evil. But wait, hold on a minute. Some now point to the 500 million people around the world who suffer from malaria and say, whoa, DDT is not evil. Some even ask, should we end the ban on DDT? Here today to help us explore this incredible question, we have Angela Lagomasina, who is the Director of Environmental Policy for the from the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Welcome to the Food Chain, Angela.
Hello, good day.
Good to have you aboard. What is the Competitive Enterprise Institute?
It is a free market public policy group. We advocate limited government and open markets.
Okay, good. Who pays the way?
We get charitable contributions from individual foundations and companies. Anybody who wants to support our cause, we are cause-driven, and if individuals want to support it, we are happy to accept their contributions.
Okay, good. So people contribute, and there you go. Not with us today are the Environmental Defense Fund, which used to be the Environmental Defense Fund, is now Environmental Defense, the Pesticide Action Network of North America, and, or the Silent Spring Institute, none of which would agree to discuss the issue of DDT with a Competitive Enterprise Institute. I'd like to read, if I may, from an email from one of these organizations. Angela, you better plug your ears, okay?
Okay.
It is unfortunate that Angela Lagomasina was chosen to promote DDT on your show. As you know, the Competitive Enterprise Institute is one of the think tanks that receives industry funding to, in my opinion, disinform the public to promote public health messaging. If this were Jerry Springer's show or Fox TV, I would say she is a good choice. Our network of scientists, public health professionals, teachers, and others will be very disappointed that you have allowed your show to become used as a shill for the DDT promoters. If you were to book a legitimate expert working on this issue, we would be honored to participate, but you will not be able to present an informed discussion when you give airtime to such people as Angela, whose sole job appears to be messaging against public health and environmental protections for those in industry who feel these protections impede their business. Please let us know when you would like to have a truly informed discussion, and we will be glad to participate. So, that from the environmental organizations who, I guess, are afraid to talk with you, Angela. What did you do to scare them so?
I have to ask, would they have a problem with debating with the World Health Organization, which is actually advocating DDT and has called on the environmental community to support those efforts because, as the World Health Organization official noted last September, babies are dying. He basically said, quote, you know, that he was calling on environmentalists to help save African babies the way they save the environment, and that is through a limited use of DDT, which is exactly what I'm advocating. I don't think it's that they don't want to have an informed debate. I think it's that they don't want to debate something where they're going to be placed in a very uncomfortable position, and that is policies they are advocating are having very serious adverse public health impacts. You know,
well, let's go back for take a step back here for a minute. And how is it that the Competitive Enterprise Institute finds itself in the business of advocating for the limited use of DDT?
Well, you know, we are a free market group. We believe in allowing people the freedom to have technologies to make their lives better.
Mm-hmm.
We picked the DDT issue because here's a case where there's devastating impact from not allowing people to have those freedoms through, you know, pressure campaigns and government regulations. I know that the Pesticide Action Network is still trying to advance a worldwide ban on DDT, regardless of the fact that the World Health Organization just wants to have a limited use, which is allowed under international treaty that recently initiated on in this field, dealing with these types of chemicals.
Okay, so there is an international treaty dealing with, I think, DDT. Maybe it's pesticides in general, but I know in DDT in specific, I think it's called the Stockholm
Protocol. That's right. It's the Stockholm Convention, also known as the POPs Protocol, which regulates persistent organic pollutants, those things that last and persist in the environment for a long period of time, DDT being one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And the concern is that if they're there a long time, they build up and they create problems.
Right.
There's a lot of debate about all that. But there, when they were negotiating this treaty, it became very apparent to public health officials that banning DDT outright was insane, in fact, and that people were dying and that there needs to be an exemption. And, you know,
so the, as I understand it, the Stockholm Convention says that we are going to eventually eliminate DDT from the entire world, and each country can do so as they discover how better to manage mosquitoes or something like that.
Right.
So there's an out for countries.
Basically, there's a limited exemption for DDT until something better comes along. Unfortunately, there's not many things that are better because you're talking about affordability issues. You're talking about the fact that it's persistent, believe it or not, that may be its best attribute in the DDT debate. For instance, you spray, the way they do it is they don't spray it in the environment. Well, I'm not advocating widespread agricultural use.
Well,
I'm advocating...
Angela, have you ever read Silent Spring?
Yes.
Did Rachel Carson's actually advocate for the banning of DDT?
She did not advocate an all-out ban, but she was very severe in her criticism of it.
Mm-hmm.
And said that, but she did say, in limited circumstances where there's great poverty and disease, some use of chemicals is warranted. But she very softly did she say that. And then she described DDT as an elixir of death. She said that it was going to cause one, you know, chemicals would cause, like DDT, would cause one in four people to have cancer and die. And
in essence, though, she was kind of advocating for the limited or the intelligent use of
she definitely advocated for intelligent use of pesticides.
Are you advocating for something different?
No, actually, I don't think I am. Well, my concern about her stuff is that her rhetoric was so harsh that people went off and did crazy things. And they didn't turn around and ban things.
Silent Spring came out in 1962, and DDT was banned in 1972. What happened in the interim decade?
Well, I think there was a lot of debate, and she, you know, a lot of stir, and her information got out widely, and, you know, pressure builded and mounted. Now, the other thing that happened is we were beating and fighting diseases in our country. When we finished eradicating things like malaria and really dramatically reducing a lot of other mosquito-borne problems, we didn't have so much of a need for it anymore. We created also what also happened with a big thing is we created the Environmental Protection Agency, which we didn't have before.
Mm-hmm.
And now environmental issues were at the forefront, and there was a regulatory body that could really do something. And they passed a pesticide law under which EPA could take this type of action.
Mm-hmm.
So the pressure built, the agency was formed, and one of the first things it did in its first couple of years of being in operation is it started a discussion about DDT and held hearings. And in fact, during those hearings, it was determined that DDT was not a public health problem, but that it may have had some impact on wildlife. And when it was banned, Ruckelshaus, you know, the head of the EPA, he banned it despite despite findings by that committee at EPA that it was not a public health problem, and he banned it on the basis of public health concerns.
What we do know is that it did have an adverse impact upon some of our wildlife. We're going to have to take a quick break, Angela, but when we come back, we'll pick that part of it up. What happened? What was the impact of DDT on our environment, especially with respect to mosquitoes, birds, and people? Folks, this is The Food Chain. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio. And today, what's eating what? Our mosquitoes are eating us, and what are we going to do about it? Some say that we should take action and eliminate the ban on DDT. That's an awful, frightening prospect for those of us who were raised with the notion that DDT is one of the great evils of the world. So we're going to invite you to participate in our discussion today. We have Angela Lago-Messina, who's from the Competitive Enterprise Institute, and nobody else from the other side, because nobody else would agree to appear. So it's just Angela, myself, and you. So pick up your phones, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back. Well, folks, there are hundreds of millions of people throughout the world who suffer from malaria, caused by mosquitoes, of course. Some point to these people and say that we should help them by eliminating the ban on DDT. What do you think? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. We have Angela Lago-Messina from the Competitive Enterprise Institute, and Angela suggests that we should look at banning the use of DDT, and we should look at ways of helping those who are afflicted with malaria. Correct, Angela?
That's correct.
Okay, let's go to Bill, who's got a divergent opinion. Bill, welcome to The Food Chain.
Good morning, Michael, and Ms. Lago-Messina.
Lago-Messina.
And some years back, I was reading about BT, or Bacillus thuringiensis, mm-hmm. and they had isolated a variant of the species called Variety israelensis, which was specific to mosquitoes, and was coming along in development and the discovering of quite a bit of efficiency among the mosquito species. Well, there's 8,000 species of mosquitoes, so I don't know how widespread effective it was.
I think only two of them carry the malaria. Isn't that true, Angela?
It's the Anopheles mosquito, but there may be many different subspecies of that. Uh-huh. It's an Anopheles mosquito, okay. Malaria.
Okay, then you're at least a little bit aware of this, the BT as an alternative, and I was just wondering what your opinions are for the use of BT as an alternative. And so I'll take my answer on the end. Thank you.
Thanks,
okay, Bill. BT meaning a bacterial-based?
Bacillus thuringiensis.
Yeah. I mean, if somebody can make it work as effectively and do as great of a job as DDT, I'd be all for it. In fact, we're all for the development of new technologies. Unfortunately, it's not widely available now, not affordable now for the way DDT is. Also, the persistence of DDT means that what they do is they spray the inside of huts and around the houses. They don't have to use it in the environment. So it basically acts as a repellent. Keeps the mosquitoes from entering the home and feeding at night. So it's kind of a different kind of function, and if you can sort of keep people away from the mosquitoes, the virus has nowhere to sort of survive and eventually can die out, and that's sort of how the process of DDT works.
Well, good. Thank you for that call, Bill. I had to drop. You had some line difficulties there. The number's today, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Angela, what happened when we banned DDT in 1972? What happened to our environment? I mean, if you look around the United States, we're not having any problems with malaria, and yet we have no DDT. It seems like why can't the rest of the world?
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's my point. What we did is we used a lot of DDT in the environment, and we eradicated the mosquitoes that carry the virus. And the way the virus works, as they're saying, it's the human is the host. And so as long as there are humans with the virus in them and other mosquitoes bite them, those mosquitoes bite somebody else, those people end up getting sick. But once you break that cycle, you keep the humans away from the bad mosquitoes, the virus dies out. And that's what we were able to do using DDT. The other thing that we have a great advantage of is we have screens on our windows. And, you know, as countries develop and they can find ways to separate themselves from the mosquitoes, lots of diseases go down. And we have these great advantages. Ideally, that's what we want to happen in the developing world. We want them to have a better life, to have some more secure, safer homes. But they're not going to get there if they're dying in droves or if they're constantly sick. Try to imagine an economy trying to develop when, you know, 50% of the people are coming down with diseases that are keeping them from working.
Is that the extent to which malaria has invaded some of these countries, 50%?
Well, it's a lot of people. I mean, I'm sure that I don't know the exact number, but it is very high, and the impact on the economy is very significant. Mm-hmm. We're not talking 2%. We're not talking 3%. We're talking maybe a third of the people out of the workforce. It just depends on the nation and the extent. I'm sure there are some cases where it can be that high. But, when people are constantly sick, having a developing economy is very, very difficult.
Well, okay. Let's go to the birds. And that's really what Silent Spring was all about, of course. Birds weren't singing in the spring, and Rachel Carson wrote a book about it and suggested that DDT and other chemicals in the environment are largely responsible for that. And since we banned DDT in 1972, we do seem to have a resurgent population of raptors. There's eagles.
It's interesting. I mean, I think there's evidence that it did thin eggshells and had some kind of an impact. I don't know if it was endangering species. There may have been other factors like hunting of eagles. Apparently, there's some data showing that they were rebounding before we got rid of DDT. It's not all clear, but I don't advocate that type of use. Certainly, and I've talked to people in the medical entomology field, mosquito control officials. They don't see DDT as appropriate, like for West Nile virus or things of that nature. It's because it's different. For instance, you know how DDT, the malaria vector resides in the human host. West Nile resides in the birds. You have to use a lot of DDT to really try to bring it down. They don't see it as the appropriate one. Some of them do have concerns also about the impacts on wildlife. Most of them are biologists. And, you know, if we have other alternatives and we've been able to control disease, then we don't need to use that. And they are using a bunch of things. Mostly, I think some of their best tools are trying to prevent the mosquito larvae from developing into mosquitoes. And that means, you know, they use fish, they use all kinds of, they use that bacteria that the gentleman raised, talked about.
Bacillus thuringiensis.
Yeah, and right. So there are other tools that they feel are more effective and appropriate right now in the U.S. In Africa, they see many of them see the value of the DDT because, again, these people don't have screens. It's a residential use. It's not widespread in the environment. So it's being used in a way that really has minimal impact, except that the positive impacts are big for human life.
So once again, you seem to be suggesting not the indiscriminate use, but the real intelligent use of DDT to protect in environments that offer no other way of doing it. You know, a lot of the environmental organizations in their communications with me have suggested that there are a lot of integrated vector management ways of taking care of mosquitoes. What you seem to be saying is that they can work pretty good in an environment such as ours, where we have a lot of controls, but where things are out of control, they don't work very well.
They don't work as well, for certain. I mean, here, you know, you can send out an advisory and tell people to empty their bird baths. You really can't do that in Africa. You know, it's a very different world and very different situations. And, you know, they don't have the type of sophisticated systems we have. I was very happy to learn when I started working on these issues how incredibly sophisticated our mosquito control programs are. We have people at Harvard who help the people in Massachusetts. We have people at all these great universities doing wonderful research. They don't have that in Africa. And they also have circumstances where people don't have screens, and they're not even drinking clean water. You know, they don't have the same benefits we do, and DDT is a very appropriate tool for them. In addition, they're dealing with a completely different disease, a different type of mosquito. There are tons of different types of mosquitoes of different behavior. And, you know, they got to analyze the mosquito behavior and the circumstances into which transmission is occurring, lots of factors. So, you know, we've been finding, and the World Health Organization has come out with the recognition that DDT right now is the most affordable and most capable of saving lots of lives.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, I'd like to talk about those people in the developing world. I have some friends down in the islands of Vanuatu who must deal with this all the time. And, of course, those who are in the tropical sections of the world do have to deal with it. Folks, this is The Food Chain. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. And, of course, today What's Eating What is mosquitoes, and they're eating us. And what are we going to do about it? What we do about it here in the developed world does not seem to be working so well in the developing world. So should we continue the ban on DDT, or should we allow and encourage those in the developing world to use DDT? What do you think? Would Rachel Carson be rolling over in a grave if she heard us talking like this? 800-624-2665, 831-4719-80. Once again, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson with Angela Lago-Messina, and you do stay tuned. We will be right back. Well, what do you think out there? Do you think that we should ease the restrictions on the use of DDT and allow people in developing nations to use it to protect themselves? Or do you think that we should enforce that Stockholm Convention and make them find another way to protect themselves? Phone numbers today, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Michael Olson here with Angela Lago-Messina, who is the Director of Environmental Policy for the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Angela, you get in a lot of trouble for advocating for the use of DDT, or is it just my imagination?
Well, we get some hate mail and some negative commentary from a certain subset of groups. But that's it. We also get a lot of praise from people that are concerned about this issue. And we're working with a group called Africa Fighting Malaria, which has been able to get Nobel Peace Prize winners and others to sign letters and to really work on this issue. In fact, a lot of their work is what helped originally get this exemption, and they helped coordinate some of the public health officials on the issue and get them on letters and get them on record. And we also work with I've been able to work a lot with the vector control people who work around the country on these issues, and have, you know, they seem to like what I'm doing, and I've talked to people at the universities and places like that. So that's what matters to me.
So you do have some friends out there.
Yeah, not whether some smaller group of people who just philosophically disagree with me are upset. You know, I'm more concerned about what the experts think, and I've had positive feedback.
Well, isn't that true with what makes it so hard to see the light, I guess, is that everybody has experts. And like the folks who we quoted earlier, you know, they're saying if you were to have our experts on with us, we would be glad to talk with you. But since you're having their experts on, we're not going to talk with you.
I don't consider the people that I've talked to in the vector control my experts, because they're people who have different politics than I do. They have different world philosophies. It's just that they're at the university doing the research on, you know, vector control, and you know, they see this as making a lot of sense. You know, just to be prudent in how we use things, of course, and always, you know, you always got to follow the directions on the label when you have something you're using at home, and you know, things are designed to be used a certain way and not other ways. And you know, they're very judicious and very cautious.
Well, wasn't that something that Rachel Carson was pointing out, is that during that time in 1962, we were essentially being very indiscriminate about how we did everything.
You know, there was a review of her book in Science magazine back, you know, right after she released it, and it said, yeah, she's raising important issues about we need to be more judicious and we need to think more about this. However, he said, there's a great concern when you go to the extreme, and then she used very extreme rhetoric, and you don't consider the risk and the benefits of these things. And she never discussed that DDT saved lives. She never discussed any benefit from any product. And she also tried to link things that were not really linked. Like, there was a guy in the book who sprayed pesticides for cockroaches and had a problem with uncontrolled bleeding. Most likely two very unrelated events. The guy eventually got leukemia, and she tried to imply that using pesticides gives you leukemia. There's no data to that. You know, when you do that kind of stuff, you create fear where it shouldn't be. And so she didn't give a balanced view. She did have, again, but she was smart enough to put those caveats in there saying there are cases when you need to use this stuff. Be careful, though.
Okay, good. Let's go to the phones today, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Let's talk with Pat. Pat, welcome to the Food Chain.
Yeah, hi. So you couldn't get anybody to come on the air and
well, I tried, you know, for a week. I tried these, you know, these environmental organizations, and they would not come on. I suppose I could have found somebody if I looked for another, you know, period of time, but I just ran out of time.
No kidding. That's pretty disappointing because it's always much better. I mean, if you just had somebody coming on trashing DDT, it would be good to have this woman come on as a counterpoint, but just to hear one side really kind of compromises the usefulness of the discussion.
Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully that's what the phones are for, and hopefully you'll come on with a brilliant insight and helps out here.
Oh, thanks. Well, my brilliant insight, which I'm sure she'll disagree with me on, nevertheless, what Western medicine did was to basically dramatically reduce death rates. Part of that was achieved through the use of DDT, right?
Right.
Unfortunately, Western medicine wasn't nearly as quick at reducing birth rates. So we have this enormous population explosion, which in Africa is probably the worst in the world, except for maybe in the some of the Muslim world.
Well, it's that way in the Amazon basin as well. I mean, it is that there are a lot of people.
Well, yeah, but the populations are exploding, and it's not in a lot of the world. The population explosion has not stopped, but actually slowed down a good deal, which is good. But
so, what are you suggesting here?
There are places, and she's speaking of Africa, and Africa is Exhibit A. The population is exploding, and the idea that we are going to be able to just come up with magical market-based solutions or non-market-based solutions for an exploding population is just an act of insanity. There's no way you can do that. It's just basically...
So what are you suggesting, that we continue the ban on DDT so that the mosquitoes will give everybody malaria so that they'll die? Is that what you're telling us?
Well, that's the usual response when somebody argues birth control. Well, what do you want to do? Increase death control? No, I want to increase birth control. That's my point.
Okay.
If we have birth control,
let's see what Angela has to say about that.
Thank you
for the call, Pat. I really appreciate it. Angela, how would you respond to something like that?
Okay, a couple points. One of the reasons people want to have more children is because a lot of them are dying. I mean, literally, when you're having that kind of situation, people will continue to have, you know, if only so many are going to survive. You know, that is part of it. But also the most important thing is their stage of development. Market forces did help us in that category because people ended up making those decisions in a developed economy of what they wanted to do and have less. But there, they don't have even the money for birth control. And I don't really think that an argument about population has any relevance on whether or not we should continue to allow people to die. I mean, I either you want to save people or you don't. There are some environmental groups out there that do think that DDT, the absence of DDT and malaria going high, is a good way to control population. I personally don't have that opinion. I also think that it's not population that's the problem. It's how people are not able to generate resources. They don't have economies the way we do. They don't have free societies the way we do. And that's the cause of poverty. The cause of dirty water is not population per se. It's the fact that they can't afford to have clean, you know, facilities to clean their water. Now, we have a lot of population growth here, but we also have a lot of economic growth. You know, it's about expanding the pie. It's not just that the pie is so limited and we have to start getting rid of people.
And that's the essence of the population argument, isn't it? Let's go on to Mary. Mary, welcome to the Food Chain.
Hi, Michael.
Oh, gosh. There's the break. Can you hold on?
Sure.
Okay. Doggone it. There's the folk. I just dropped her, too. Maybe Mary will call back. Folks, this is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here with Angela Lagomasina from the Competitive Enterprise Institute. We're talking about an incredibly important issue in the world, and that is, of course, the incidence of malaria. Hundreds of millions of people have it. Entire cultures live with it and fight with it and try to develop under its scourge. Should we allow them to use DDT to protect themselves, or should we continue to encourage them to ban that substance? What do you think? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back. Please do stay tuned.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. MetroFarm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. MetroFarm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. MetroFarm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of MetroFarm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Should we end the ban on DDT? What do you think? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Michael Olson here. This is The Food Chain, and we have Angela Lagomasini with the Competitive Enterprise Institute. And those folks suggest that we should be able to use, intelligently use DDT to protect the people of the developing world. Let's go to Mary and see what Mary thinks. Mary, welcome to The Food Chain.
Hi, Michael. I actually just got back from about my fourth trip to Vanuatu. And the first couple of times I went, I took medication that made me extremely sick.
Anti-malaria medication?
Exactly. And you start it 2 weeks before you go to a country that has prevalent malaria. And then you continue with it for a period of time afterwards. And I got to tell you, you can feel your brain cells melting with it. It makes you nauseous, tremendous headaches. Just about everything that could physically go wrong with your body, you just know it's not good stuff. So the last couple of times I've gone over, I've used DEET. And that gives me asthma and also makes me sick. And this time I had about 20 bites from mosquitoes. And I'm waiting. You know, I'm going through a period of time that, you know, it takes for the parasites to attack your body. And it's nerve-wracking. And in addition to that, I know people over there and love them dearly. And, you know, it's something they live with. You know, the mortality rate for their children is very high. And, you know, obviously they're sick. If you live through it, you get the disease again and again. So it's not a fun thing. And my concern is that, you know, this world that we're in now is not, you know, closed borders anymore. We're bringing this stuff back. I mean, West Nile disease, who knows what's next?
Well, isn't that something Angela was talking about, is that with open borders you bring in people who are the vectors. Isn't that right, Angela?
Yes, for some diseases, you know, the more there's world travel, you know, those are the risks. Mm-hmm. I think we are fortunately far better positioned to manage those than most places in the world, and that's why we have to be vigilant. And we have to make sure that we have our tools and our ducks in a row, too. And there's some policy issues in Washington, too, about that are deterring the development of products to address these things. One of the products, though, that did recently get approved, and it's called Picaritin, and it's an alternative to DEET. So if you have an allergy to DEET, you might want to try it. It's like a lemon oil-based thing. And apparently it's very effective. So that's something the next time you travel you might want to look into. But, yes, I totally agree that, you know, we have new challenges, and that's, you know, why we have to also be vigilant here.
Well, Mary, do you think those people in the developing world should be allowed to use DDT?
Well, I'll tell you what I know is going on, and I actually haven't asked the question, are you using DDT in Vanuatu? However, I know that they're trying to educate the population there to not let, you know, to not keep standing water. However, mm-hmm. in 1 hour, in about 45 minutes, it rained over 5 inches of rain. You know, it just buckets come down. And so how in a climate like that do you not have standing water? It's monumental.
Yes, they have a lot of challenges, and we have those challenges when we have hurricanes and things here. But certainly, as you're pointing out, the challenges there are just so much higher and just so much more difficult.
Mary, thank you for the call.
Thank you for the show, Michael.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Gail. Gail, welcome to the food chain.
I'm here.
You're up there in wet, soggy Humboldt County where there are no mosquitoes, right? Are you there? Do we lose you? She just fell off. Maybe she'll call back. Let's go to Steve. Steve, are you there?
Yeah, speaking.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just wanting to kind of reemphasize something Mrs. Lagomarsino mentioned earlier.
Lagomarsini.
Lagomarsini?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I have a road near my area, Lagomarsino. I got confused.
Okay.
Okay, anyway, she did mention about bird counts, and I did some studying on this a couple years back, and the fact is the Audubon Society itself, its bird counts showed that the numbers of bald eagles and falcons actually increased during the decades that DDT was used, you know, from the 40s to the 70s. And
the Audubon Society?
Yeah.
Wow.
Audubon Society bird counts. And also regarding the 1972 ban under, EPA Administrator William Ruckelshaus, something that I think should be pointed out, too, is that she mentioned that he ignored the findings of his own examiners. But one thing she didn't mention, might not be aware of, is he was actually a card-carrying member of the Environmental Defense Fund at the time, and that's the organization which was petitioning for the ban. So that was like having the accuser sitting as the judge.
Angela?
That's very interesting. I know that he had certainly had a lot of those interests.
And
so that's an interesting thing to learn.
Yeah. And the problem when this gets out of hand, there are people that are against any kind of chemical. They're like chemophobes. In our area, they convinced the county supervisors to ban the use of Roundup and controlling weeds along the edge of county roads. And mm-hmm. now the county doesn't have the money to hand cut them, so we have weeds going crazy, fire hazard, drivers vision obscured by weeds on curves, and the weeds going in and cracking the pavement.
Steve, we're going to have to take a quick break right now, but Steve, should we allow people in developing nations to use DDT to protect themselves from malaria carrying mosquitoes?
I think it's a nation by nation choice.
Okay, good. Thank you very much.
And if we're at all, you know, kind at all, we should assist them, because there's some nations that would like to do it, but if they can't obtain it or something, you know.
Okay, right back. Thank you very much for the call. This is the Food Chain, Michael Olson. We're gonna pick up Gail. She's back from up there in Northern California, so we'll pick her up when we get back from this break. Michael Olson here. This is the Food Chain with Angela Lagomarsini, who is the Director of Environmental Policy, Competitive Enterprise Institute. Should we allow for the use of DDT? What do you think?
Water users, you can reduce your need for water by 30% and more, grow healthier plants, and get rid of calcium carbonate deposits. No, not by magic. By installing an Aquamax catalytic converter in your water line that will induce epitaxial nucleation. Listen.
My name is Dave. I'm from Las Vegas, Nevada. Well, my pool maintenance is virtually none. There's no scale buildup on the tile whatsoever. I just take a damp cloth every so often and wipe the tile down, and that's as much work as I have to do. I don't have to aerate my lawn at all now. I just fertilize once in the spring and once in the fall, and that pretty much maintains my lawn.
You can reduce your need for water by 30% and more, grow healthier plants, and eliminate calcium carbonate deposits just by installing an Aquamax on your water line. No chemicals, no filters. Explore the possibility. Go to metrofarm.com, click on the Aquamax Water Saver banner, and save. That's metrofarm.com.
Welcome back, folks. This is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We've got Angela Lagomarsini from the Competitive Enterprise Institute. It seems like you're pretty much towing the same line that Rachel Carson was talking about, that if we're going to use this stuff, we should be responsible, and we should only use it where we absolutely have to use it. So really, what is the difference between you and Rachel Carson?
Well, we have a website. It's called rachelwaswrong.org, and it details this whole issue. And my qualm with her is there were a lot of things that she said that were factually incorrect, like the fact that mm-hmm. people give you candy cans, things that have just not been demonstrated. So there were a lot of, in my opinion, errors. And her biggest error is to not have a risk-risk approach, to not consider the benefits of things and not have a balanced approach.
So
it's all negative.
So in other words, that if it does a little wrong, then it's all wrong, is what you're saying.
No, yeah, well, if it might be wrong.
Well, let's go to Gail, and maybe Gail can stand up for Rachel Carson. Gail, Okay. Welcome to the food chain.
Hi. In Louis Regenstein's very brilliant and meticulously researched book, How to Survive in America the Poisoned, he pointed out the terrible...
America the Poisoned. There went her cell phone. Gail's on a cell phone up in Northern California, and evidently we lost the cell, so there he goes. But do you have any idea where she was going to go with that? Have you read America the Poisoned?
No. I mean, I really don't know where she what her question
okay.
is going to be, unfortunately.
I guess we're stuck with that. So where do we go from here? It is possible for a lot of places in the world to use DDT now. They have an exemption. If they can prove that nothing else works, they can use DDT to protect themselves.
DDT is not like other chemicals these days. When we got a question, or when I got the criticism from the environmental groups where they said I'm getting money from corporations, there's no corporation that's interested really in DDT. They're not producing it. This is really something that some governments still produce. It's hard to find, hard to get, because there's no profit in it. So it's all about what the World Health Organization is going to be able to dispense as far as resources and other sort of aid and organizations and governments getting access to DDT, to actually put it into use. And it's a huge challenge. And there are a lot of different approaches. One of the individuals that I work with on this issue is with the Congress for Racial Equality, and they have an office in Uganda. And he thinks they should bring the military out, you know. And I mean, this is an emergency situation. If we had this many people dying in the United States, we would have every operation, every military outfit out there fighting this. I really don't know what the best approach is. I know there are people out there trying to set up local programs where people in the community are educated and trained so that they can, become public health officials within the community and help people. And DDT is not the only thing that should be used. There's medicines that are being developed. Unfortunately, resistance issues with those are very problematic. But it's there. People want to use bed nets. Unfortunately, people don't use them right. They are also include insecticides, which actually are have more health impacts than DDT, probably good. But
well, what
it's
about using
an arsenal of tools.
Yeah, what about Rachel's legacy, though? Wasn't she right, or was she wrong?
Well, we believe she was wrong. Ultimately, her rhetoric is too severe, and people need to be a little bit more cautious when they read that kind of stuff.
Okay, Angela, thank you very much. We're out of time. Angela Lagomassini, Director of Environmental Policy, Competitive Enterprise Institute. Thank you all so much for tuning in. Remember, cheap food isn't.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.